Welcome to episode 7 of the Panic Pod. The title of this episode is called Instant Gratification. Much like this podcast, if you feel that like pulling teeth gives you instant gratification. How are you doing, Ella?
I'm doing very well today, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm having a nice day. I'm glad we could squeeze this hour in to talk about this subject. Instant gratification, it was something that you suggested at the end of last episode, and I thought, actually, that times just nicely, considering where we are on the timeline of talking about anxiety and how it develops and the phenomenology of anxiety. What made you think of that?
Yeah, so just at the end of the last podcast, we had been talking about anxiety and avoidance. So we were talking about, within that, exposure therapy is the process of when you either incrementally or all at once put yourself in the situation of what makes you anxious in order to just be there, be present, process the feelings that are happening, and fully experience it, whether that's with support, whether that's incrementally or just by yourself. And then, but sometimes people do that. They go through this process of exposure and they sort of say, okay, well, I did what I was supposed to do, or I did what my therapist told me to do, but I still don't feel like I have changed or that something is better. Which sometimes happens, because I think by and large, when people do finally push themselves through that fear, then you just realize, okay, yeah, I wasn't harmed in that process. But what I was curious about was, how do we handle those feelings when, you know, we did have a panic attack, or we did, we didn't feel right afterwards. We said, okay, well, I did what my therapist is going to tell me, or what my therapist told me to do, but I don't feel changed, or I don't feel like something has passed. So the idea of actually being your own advocate for yourself in that scenario is what I wanted to talk about.
Okay, that's a lovely summary as well. As you're talking about that, I remember certain things that I used to do when I was suffering with anxiety pretty badly. And it's the looking for immediate solutions to things. So if you're particularly feeling grim, feeling anxious, and particularly for people with panic disorder or high levels of anxiety, what they like to do is they like to try techniques or do things to feel like the anxiety can go away. So, because if I'm feeling anxious, I don't want to feel anxious, and I hate it so much that I try all these different things. So if I do this, if I try to meditate, if I try deep breathing, if I do all this, I would then, and many of my clients, many people with anxiety, would then do something I call testing.
Okay, what's testing?
Well, it's looking for that immediate gratification and that immediate response, and testing to see what they're doing to see if the anxiety passes, because they hate it so much. So if you're sat there feeling anxious, and you really don't like feeling anxious, and you're feeling panicky, like you said, you might think, okay, right, I was told to deep breathe. Right, I've breathed twice. Is it gone yet? No, it's still there. Okay, let's do something else. Let's do tapping. Is that done? No. Okay, let's do the washing up. Right, I've done the washing up. Has the anxiety gone yet? No. And you're searching for that immediate gratification.
Well, that makes so much, right. You really, yeah, by demonstrating it, that's totally made it clear, of constantly asking that question, is it gone yet? Is it gone yet?
But here's the magic question. What's that telling your amygdala about feeling anxious? So remember, the amygdala, and for people who haven't listened to the episode, the amygdala is in charge of signaling the danger response when it identifies something that is potentially dangerous. But as we know, 99% of the stuff it signals isn't dangerous. It's just firing off. To turn off the amygdala, you have to show it that this feeling isn't dangerous. So what do you think testing tells the amygdala? Oh, has the anxiety gone yet? Has the breathing made the anxiety go yet?
I feel like it's just really bringing your awareness back to the amygdala, which is the problem in the first place. If the amygdala is what's firing off the adrenaline and the cortisol and I don't know all of the things that would be coming out from that result of the amygdala to the hypothalamus. But yeah, by kind of checking in with it over and over again, you're validating it, reminding it, you're re-triggering your own anxious response, I guess.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You are basically telling the amygdala, yeah, it's not okay to be anxious. So you're trying everything to escape feeling anxious. So it's not exposure therapy. You know, by not allowing yourself to be anxious, you're not exposing yourself to being anxious. And when people look for instant gratification through things like meditation, breathe, the amount of people that come to me actually and they say, oh, I've tried the meditation apps, or I've tried diaphragmatic breathing, or I've tried EFT, or I've tried herbal remedies, I've tried valerian, I've tried rescue remedy, I've tried all this. Well, it's that very trying to rid yourself of that anxiety that keeps reminding the amygdala and reinforcing the amygdala that it isn't okay to be anxious. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that really makes sense. And I know that I'm always doing this, bringing in, I've got another Eastern philosophy tidbit to bring into the discussion. I know that I've done that a few times now.
Bring it in, Nicole. We need to make this podcast cultured. Let's do it.
But I got so stoked on this one that I was like, I was sharing it with my dad. I love when I go on YouTube and you just put on like an Alan Watts lecture from the 70s and like him and Ram Dass were these folks coming over trying to translate some of the stuff that was coming out of books with Eastern philosophy over to like Western culture. So there's a concept that he was discussing called Wu Wei, which basically translates to not forcing. And it's a great, just people who YouTube Wu Wei, W-U, and then another word, W-E-I. I can't explain the whole thing in like a short amount of time, but if I were to try to summarize it, it translates to not forcing. The best metaphor that he had for it to explain it is when we think we're rowing, we're forcing. We think that we have this thing that we're trying to get to. Maybe it's, I want to be clear of my anxiety. I want to have a clear head again. Or perhaps maybe that's something more like, I really want to get this job or this, this achievement, you know, or I'll be recognized when I can perform at this place or like whatever it may be. And we feel like we're rowing, that's when things don't work. But if we approach it like we're sailing, that's when things become a little bit easier because we're not forcing that we have full control over what's about to happen. We just sort of abide by the fact that we don't have absolute control over our destiny. We have some control, but you also just have to kind of let things flow and let it happen. And as I've been talking to more people about it since a couple weeks ago when I was listening to that and sharing it, then I also kind of like the idea whenever my bandmate has said, he's introduced me to the concept of like, hold it lightly. What does that mean if you're trying to get something done or you're really caring about your career or like how you're seen socially? If you hold it lightly, then there's less weight to it. And it's sort of like if you're trying to grab a bar of soap, the harder you clutch it, it just shoots out of your hand. But if you're just picking something up gently, if you just kind of submit to the fact that you don't have full control, then you have an easier time sort of letting things go. And that testing, that checking in is sort of that constant reminder of like, I've got to be in control. I've got to be in control. But if you were to try to allow yourself to be distracted and reduce how many times you're testing yourself, then I think that that's kind of what Alan Watts was trying to describe in this Wu Wei talk.
That's perfect. I think that's really helpful as well. And I like how you've kind of conceptualized that and made it relatable to kind of what we're talking about. Because many people with anxiety don't accept. They won't accept actually, you know, things aren't really in my control sometimes. So people with general anxiety or panic disorder will wake up in the morning and they'll go, many of them, their first thought will be, how do I feel today?
Wow. Wow, yeah. Yep. I can both relate to that and also see now how bad that can be for you from both sides of that, for sure.
Yeah. Because whereas maybe Joe Bloggs, and we all envy Joe Bloggs, Joe Bloggs might wake up feeling rubbish, but it doesn't stop him from doing what he's doing because he doesn't know, you know, he knows that actually he might feel okay by the afternoon.
Hmm.
You know? Yeah, it's testing everywhere and getting frustrated when we don't have that immediate, instant impact that we wanted. You take it with other facets of anxiety too, like social anxiety, for one. I work with people with social anxiety, and they'll say, right, what we need to do is we need to start using exposure therapy. In the bits between our sessions, in the session, I like to talk in a humanistic way by explaining why people's opinions are important to them, etc., and allowing them a space to talk about things so we can develop an understanding. But in between sessions, the hard work goes in turning that amygdala off in exposure. Mm. So what a lot of my clients will do is they will have the homework and will say, right, go to this party. So let's say I have a client called Jeff. And Jeff wants to go to the party, but he's really nervous about it and he's scared of it. So then he goes to the party and he knows he's aware. He's doing really well so far. He's doing all the correct things. He's not avoiding. He goes there and there's no micro avoidances. He's not hiding his hands or just getting hammered. He's just going to go as himself and go there. But he's there and he manages to stay there for half an hour. And which is really brave, and then he comes home. Anyway, he turns up to the next kind of session going, oh, I was there, but it was rubbish, I couldn't do it. And as it transpires, he was there, and he was just, because he went to the party, he actually spent a lot of the time going, has it gone yet? I'm here now, is the exposure working yet? Rather than just allowing that feeling to be there, and then kind of praising himself afterwards. So not only is instant kind of gratification or instant the use of testing, it's people trying to search for relief, trying to search for the fact that, oh, is the anxiety gone yet so I can relax? But also they're searching for praise. They're searching for a reason to go, oh, I can praise myself now it's gone. And that's a skewed perception of how to work with it. You know, that's how it can really be a hindrance to certain things when you're testing. No, I hate the word test anyway. It has such negative connotations.
But no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that I can relate to the feeling of when you acknowledge that you have anxiety, and if it gets particularly bad, you just want to know if there's something you can do to wipe it completely away, to just take all of that away. And people who are really suffering just hope that there's an easier fix to just completely eliminate this inner narrative that you have. I mean, for me, I've said a few times that for me, it's very much like I have an inner monologue that goes, some people don't always have that. Some people, it's more like physical sensation maybe for themselves. Mm. With those, when you're acknowledging that there are such things as those intrusive thoughts or intrusive feelings and emotions, how do you live with them? Because they're not going to go away. You're just going to turn down the volume sort of thing. And it isn't totally the same, but when the author Elizabeth Gilbert was talking about fear in terms of being an artist and getting yourself out there and trying to push yourself through times when you feel really uncertain of what you're doing, she used the metaphor that like fear is always going to be in the car with you, but you can choose where in the car they're sitting. And so fear, if you can be present with it, you can sort of communicate, you can stay here, but you're going to be in the back seat. And every once in a while you can give your opinion on where you're going, but you're sure as hell not taking the wheel, was sort of her like philosophy of it. And that can be really hard for people who feel like that fear is at the wheel and is always just taking over the situation, moments where it's like, I have to leave the party now. Or you're doing everything in your conscious, like your rational mind, to be working against it and telling it what to do. it's so hard to be present with it, you know, and not just want to throw it out the window, because you can't. The amygdala is your response that's trying to help you, and it's always going to be there.
I really like, it's a cliche, if people are studying kind of psychology to a high level, I apologize in advance, but I really love simplified things to help with anxiety. And it's interesting you use the word fear. So, you know, people like to break that down. Is it an acronym? I can't remember. I don't know. I'm going to embarrass myself here. And you break down into F-E-A-R. So fear stands for false evidence appearing real. And I really like that. I think that's really good for anxiety. False evidence appearing real. And so if we take the example of Jeff at the party, he might be thinking, what if people are judging me? What if people are happening doing this? What if I have a panic attack here? What if I fail? What if work find out that I've been out late and sack me? What if... And in your mind, and like you said, you either get inner monologue or images, or some people get physical sensations, or just a general feeling that something's going to go bad. It's false evidence. But if we react to it like it's real, then that basically completes fear. It's like, oh God. So I say to people, if you do have the anxious response, what can you do about it? Just accept that you're going to feel rubbish for a little bit, and then try and guide your focus onto something else. Anything. Guide your focus on something else. I have a little, you know, I play games on my phone, I'll go out, I'll just talk to someone. I'll do basically what I usually do. Anything but sitting there and staring at this monologue and listening to all the what ifs, all the false evidence appearing real. Because why would I do that?
It sounds like when you describe those things as well, playing a game on your phone, talking to a friend, whatever it might be, there's an element of taking care of yourself, though that can look like really different things. Like that, yeah, I was talking about on my radio show this morning when I had a moment in the weekend where, again, it was like, physically, I know I'm just feeling this because I'm like hungover and I need to eat a salad and do some exercise, but you know, I'm feeling a bit rubbish and I'm feeling kind of just like I need a pal. And so it was so easy to recognize that, yeah, I just need to kind of take care of myself. I ended up calling my cousin, having dinner with him, and I kept like apologizing. He kept saying like, you could just call me and ask to come for dinner. Like, you don't have to, this isn't some big thing. But I just realized how beneficial that was for me. And that's why I wanted to thank him so much by just saying like, I just, yeah, it just helps me so much right now to just like get with another person and just be, you know, to just avoid, or just not even that there's something to avoid, but as soon as you're with another person, then that constant like validation of that anxiety response just melts. It's not like it's being avoided, but it takes time and gradually it just melts if it's someone who you can feel comfortable with.
And that in itself is the gratification, isn't it? Whereas if you're someone who's very hard on themselves, they'll be like, I'm ticking all these boxes, I've met up with my cousin, why don't I feel good?
There's people that could go through the same process and then yeah, further, you don't want to take your, I think the bad thing for me would have been not calling because I felt like that would have been being a burden in some way. But if it's like, no, we're just gonna hang out and it's just what I need right now, I feel like that's in the same wheelhouse as pulling out your phone or like just doing something that feels absolutely normal to relax.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I always wanted to put a plaque in my practice and it just saying the words, do what you'd usually do. Because people are like, what do I do when I'm anxious? I was like, well, first of all, we don't need to do anything because we need to teach the amygdala it's okay. So what would you be doing? Oh, I'd probably go take the dog for a walk in the park. Well, then go and take the dog for a walk in the park. But I feel anxious. Do you feel anxious? So? It's not going to hurt you. It's discomfort. You can have some false evidence appearing real. Sorry, I cringe when I say that. But that's it.
You know, and that's great. Yeah.
Don't test. Don't be like, oh, I've entered the park now. Has it gone? Don't test. Compulsive testing is a big one. I still fall for it now and then. If anxiety ever comes back to me, I always go, oh my gosh, I know I'm back anxious again because I'm testing to see if it's there or not. But it's fine. It's allowed to be there. Mm-hmm. Don't fight it. Don't get angry at it. Don't do ever. It's okay. You can also apply kind of testing and feeling instantly good with anything as well. Like if you're trying to search for a, if you're trying to search for a feeling. So if you're searching for contentment or happiness to feel gratified, what people will do is they'll apply the same philosophy. So they'll go and they'll go, right, I did this and why aren't I feeling like I should? You know, I did this nice thing for this person. Why don't I feel good? I cut this toxic person out of my life. Why don't I feel good?
Wow, you know, yeah.
I gave a homeless person 50p. Why don't I feel good?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, when we search for it, when we're grabbing onto it, then it's trying to put a name on that stuff that's just ethereal and happens when it happens.
Mm.
But that grasping all of it too tightly is very resonant. I think you're absolutely right. People even who can't relate to talking about anxiety could definitely relate to that. You know, I finally said this, why don't I feel better? And sometimes relating to a performer friend of mine recently, he's a poet, and he was doing a Black History Month poem talking about himself, his background, to what turned out to be, when he showed up, a primarily white audience. And so he did this poem and he was voice messaging me on his way home saying, like, I don't even know if that I'm glad that I did it and I feel like I know it was right, but I don't feel right, you know, like I don't feel like settled with the fact that I did that. And so we were both acknowledging times when you did what your rational mind tells you was the right thing to do, but it's not an instant gratification that happens. And that, I think, really happens when you've done something really, there's times when you're doing something that's really important and really bold and your fear is trying to pull you down to say, like, oh, I don't know, was that really the right choice to do? In his rational mind, he knew it was premeditated. He was like, I knew this was the right thing to do. And I knew that even people came up and were appreciative of it, which was wild. Like, even people were coming up after it happened saying it was great. And still on his way home, he was like, I don't know, is that really the right thing to do? So that happens when you're doing something really important, I think, as well.
Yeah, no, that's a really good example. Why haven't I met this friend? He sounds great.
Oh, well, he is being brought into the Mystery Planet podcast fold, so maybe we'll have some cross-pollination at some point.
Yes, okay. And if you're enjoying this podcast, you can always listen to Ella's other podcast projects that she has going. What's it called again, Ella?
Mysteryplanet.net, as you'll see, we just link to Panic Pod, we're
check
the
it out.
Producers of Panic Pod. So that's great. I think I love just whenever we get the chance to name something in this podcast, because like just the term testing now, I can so relate to that. And I think that when you've named it, it's not like, again, there's no thing that just makes everything immediately go away, but I'm going to know now when I'm testing. I used to think it's just like the same philosophy, oh, just let it go. But now I know the term testing, and I think it's all going to become a lot more recognizable for me for that as well. So,
and look out for any compulsive testing. And so compulsive testing is the one. You're out to test.
Right.
Now, you know, you're out to check in.
Right.
But if it's compulsive, you're getting frustrated that you don't feel a certain way after doing something, then it's a bit like, hold on, maybe I should be a bit more living in the moment a little bit, or trusting in the process and knowing that actually maybe in the long term it's make me feel a bit better. Which is something to look at. Brilliant. Okay. I look forward to talking about the next subject. We'll have a chat after this podcast to see what we want to talk about. But I think we should leave that there. Instant gratification. And just have a think about that, particularly in relation to anxiety. If you have any questions, please feel free to email in. You can get me at my email address, which we both read. It is talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. It's available on the Panic Pod website, thepanicpod.com. Just to repeat, that is talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. I don't know why I said that. I mean, people could just rewind. I feel like I'm leaving a voicemail.
But we love hearing from people. We really want to make this as useful as possible, and that comes from direct questions and people with their own concerns. Yeah,
come help us steer the ship, because we're bored of doing it. Well, we're not. We love doing it. But it'd be nice to go with what you want to do.
Yeah.
Okay, Alec, you have a wonderful rest of the day, and I look forward to sitting down with you again to talk more.
Thanks, Josh.
Okay. Bye-bye.